This episode addresses homelessness in Victoria, BC, with occasional mentions of such traumatic circumstances as the opioid crisis, tent communities and sheltering bans, and homeless deaths. The bulk of the conversation, however, focuses on compassionate acts of kindness. Oh, the lid's off the cookie jar! Hi, I'm Christine Bruce, broadcasting through CICK 93.9 FM on Wet'suwet'en Territory, also known as Smithers, BC. The Backpack Project is a Victoria, BC initiative that provides mutual aid to community members who live without homes. They collect life-saving supplies such as tents, sleeping bags, blankets, clothing, food, water, and medical supplies, and distribute those supplies to anyone in need. Nikki Otteson and her family are the official name behind the Backpack Project, but as Nikki will tell us, the initiative only succeeds because of the generous support and donations from local businesses and everyday citizens throughout the Greater Victoria Regional District. On any given day, Nikki's Facebook page is being watched by 3,000 people ready to help. Like all Canadian cities, there are homeless encampments and parks across Victoria, BC. Various reports cite the number 1,525 people experiencing homelessness or precarity in Victoria in 2018, in 2019, in 2020, and in 2021. The same statistic appears 4 years running, and I'm unconvinced. While it's complicated to discover how many homeless people there are at any given time, estimates suggest there are far more than we realize. One of the effects of precarity that research is exposing is the terrible stigma surrounding homelessness. Often driven by a not-in-my-backyard mentality, this stigma has inspired numerous anti-homeless laws. Anti-homeless attitudes keep homeless people out of sight and therefore no longer our responsibility. Victoria has its NIMBYs, but it also has a strong community of generous, kind, and accepting citizens who have been distributing backpacks and supplies to those in the Victoria community who call the streets their home. You will hear me ask Nikki what the population of Victoria is presently to get a sense of the severity of the homeless situation there. She is unable to offer that figure spontaneously, but believes the precariously housed are coming to Victoria from across the Greater Victoria region. I later learned that the Greater Victoria region has a combined population of 397,237, to be precise, according to the 2021 Canadian Census. The region comprises two of the 15 most populous municipalities in British Columbia. Welcome to the Cookie Jar, Nikki. I've been following your initiative for a while, and I'm so glad we could connect. Let's start with what the Backpack Project is and how it got started.
The Backpack Project is a community organization that I started 13 years ago. We deliver mutual aid to those in our communities who are homeless. And it started out as just me and my family. I'm a gardener by trade, so I worked in all of the parks in Victoria, and I got to know the people in the parks and who were living there. And I saw the way they lived, and I saw what little they had. And one year, one of the fellows that lived in the park, in the Gorge Park, actually, he passed away. He passed away in the snow from hypothermia. And it really gutted me. It gutted the community. You know, it was on the news, and they asked Reverend Al, they said, what can we do to help? And Reverend Al said, help them where they're at. And that really stuck with me. And I thought, well, what's a way that I could help them? And I know as a gardener, when I'm out in the cold all day long, I have a backpack full of necessities and warm items to carry with me all day. And so I thought, well, I can do that. I can create backpacks full of the stuff that I know I would want if I was outside and am outside. And so I did that. We collected 10 backpacks, and my family, my husband and my daughter and I, we took them downtown to the streets of Victoria, and they were gratefully received. And it was very moving. And the next year we did 20 backpacks, and after that we did 40, and then we needed help, and we were getting friends and community members to pitch in, and it grew from there. And at the height of our project, we were doing over 200 backpacks every Christmas, and it was mostly at Christmas time we did this, but yeah, over 200 backpacks. And then the pandemic hit, so that changed everything.
Okay. So I want to go back for a minute. I think this is such a great grassroots idea. I notice this trends in cities around the world where leadership takes a disciplinary approach to homelessness, and the average citizen steps up and does something a little gentler, a little more humane, which is what you've done. And I applaud you for that because
Thank you.
there's nothing more disturbing than watching somebody vulnerable suffer, and we just can't do anything about it. You know, there just seems to be no end of it. Okay, so you filled over 200 backpacks. That's an incredible statistic right there. But you said that things changed when the pandemic hit.
So when the pandemic hit, everybody was on lockdown. Everybody went inside. And my husband and I, like I said, we own a gardening company now. And we were one of the very few people that were out on the roads. It was gardeners and construction workers, and nobody else was outside except for the homeless. And as we were driving through town for the 2 weeks of the lockdown, I was aghast at what I saw, that our friends and family were left outside with absolutely no services. There was no soup kitchens open. Our place wasn't open. None of the nonprofits were open for at least 2 to 3 weeks. And people were struggling. They had no bathrooms, no showers, no food, no water. Some of the nonprofits, they did hand out bag lunches through the gates. The lineup for the lunches was a mile long. People were in desperate need of basic necessities, food, water, shelter, hygiene. And so I immediately put out a call to my Facebook group, and I said, "Here's where we're at, and people need food." And I was absolutely overwhelmed with the amount of food that my followers gave to me. And so I would go out once a week, every Friday, and I would hand out food and water every Friday during the pandemic. And it was overwhelming. It was absolutely overwhelming. We were ill prepared for what was going on. And then I saw the displacement of Topaz Park and Pandora Green. I saw the displacement of those people. And I followed them because I was still delivering lunches to them. And I ended up in Beacon Hill Park. And that's when I set up a couple of tents with the backpack name on it. And I just said, "This is a donation tent for the Backpack Project. And whoever wants to donate to the people in the park, please do so." And so people would drop off donations to in Beacon Hill Park, and the people that lived in the park would look after the tent. They'd care for it. Well, once the numbers got too big in Beacon Hill Park, that was not going to fly anymore. So those tents were taken down, and people were basically kettled. They were kettled to sort of the soccer field, sort of petting zoo area. And they took them away from Quadra Street and the schools, of course, and everybody was willing to move because they knew it was a school area. And that's when we decided to create Monday meetings, community meetings. And so every Monday we would get together and we would hold a circle, and I would deliver supplies. I would deliver food. At this point, I was delivering hot food. I would put a call out on my backpack page, and people would donate big pots of soup or big pans of lasagna. And I would go to Beacon Hill Park every Monday, and I would feed people, and I would bring them all the donations that I have: blankets, sleeping bags, flashlights. I mean, I was getting carloads once a week throughout the whole pandemic. It was absolutely amazing. There was so much support in Victoria. Contrary to what you have heard, a lot of people cared, and they saw what was going on with their friends and family. So we formed community circles, and that lasted until, I think it was May 1st is when they said they promised everybody shelter or housing. They were promised housing, and not everybody got housed. There was quite a few people who did not get housed. You know, that experience taught me a lot. It taught me the value of community. It taught me that when we all band together and we look after each other, it makes human suffering decrease. You know, which is amazing to me that we have to do that in this day and age. But literally, people were left with nothing, and we had to fight for bathrooms, and we had to fight for showers, and we had to fight for food. And you know, yes, there were tent fires in Beacon Hill Park, but there was also a lot of people who were just barely clinging on. Like the snow that we had that year, there was no extreme weather response in 2020 because of the pandemic. And so we all just hunkered down in Beacon Hill Park and we looked after each other. And throughout the other parks, we were checking on everybody. There is a lot of outreach providers, not a lot, but there is at least four or five groups of outreach providers that are boots on the ground. And we all banded together and we took care of people, including the community care tent, which was set up and run by volunteers for, I think it was 3 or 4 months.
Okay, let's go back for a minute. You're talking about 4 different parks, and I have 2 questions about that. The first one is, do you have a general idea how many people we're talking about who are vulnerable, precariously housed?
Well, in 2019, there was a point in time count done, and we were at 1,500 in the Greater Victoria Regional District. So all 13 municipalities. Yeah, 1,500.
And what's the population of that area?
Well, it's 13 municipalities. I'm not too sure what the, I'm not too sure the numbers on that. It's a peninsula and it's actually relatively small, but most of these numbers are concentrated in, I would say, 3 or 4 municipalities. The other municipalities are more farming, and there you have your precariously housed. And if people end up unhoused out in the farm areas, they end up downtown because that's the only place you can get services.
So
I've been advocating that every municipality should have a community wellness center where people can go to access food bank and social services and healthcare and shelters. Each municipality, I believe, should be ready to have shelters. I believe the province just came out with some numbers, and in the province of BC, and this is only the ones they counted that use shelters. There's 23,000 people in BC who are homeless, and that's only the ones that use shelters.
Well, yeah, there's a lot more because, you know, there's couch surfing with somebody or temporary place to stay.
Yeah, they don't use shelters because shelters are historically unsafe places.
Well, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, my other question that I want to go back to was, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was really relieved to hear Dr. Bonnie Henry say that no one would be decamped. And then suddenly 3 of the 4 parks are cleared and people are kettled.
Yeah.
So I'm afraid to say with Dr. Bonnie Henry, because I don't want to put all the blame on one person.
Yeah, no.
But
nothing changed with her. Dr. Bonnie Henry came out with guidelines to encampments. And these were her public health and safety recommendations for the unhoused during a pandemic. And they were considered guidelines. You didn't have to use them. They weren't law. But Victoria was smart enough to know that they needed to follow these guidelines because, of course, we have 1,500 people. And not all of them in Victoria, but at the same time, like I said, they were all outside when the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
It was hundreds of people outside. So Victoria was smart enough to know that they should do this to some degree, but they got huge pushback from the anti-homeless crowd in this community, who were very vocal and very loud, actually, unfortunately. So it was like this balancing game mayor and council were trying to do during the whole time. They were trying to appease one half of the population and take care of the other half. And they actually did quite a good job. You know, I mean, they could have followed what other municipalities were doing and they could have done nothing and they could have evacuated people with police. And I mean, they did do that, but they did let them stay for a certain amount of time until summer hit. And, you know, then they promised housing, but again, not everyone was housed.
So would you say you were getting support from the Victoria City Council then and from local leadership?
Well, we were very vocal. We were all very vocal. We were trying to let them know what was going on there, what we saw. And again, there are some wonderful people in this community who rallied around. The people that built the showers, you know, we tried to donate showers. That was turned down. It all came down to inhumane bylaws that we have created. So I don't know if you've heard of the Adams decision.
No, I haven't. Let's go into that.
So in 2008, there was a court case, Victoria versus Adams, City of Victoria versus Adams, in which a homeless encampment was at St. Anne's Academy. And that was back when you weren't allowed to sleep outside. So security guards and police, if they saw you sleeping outside, They would wake you up. They would disturb you. They would, in some cases, they actually drove people to the edge of town and dropped them off to deter them from sleeping. Well, this court case was won. And so we won the right to sleep. But as soon as that happened, Victoria said, okay, you can sleep, but you can only sleep from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So they enacted this bylaw. And this bylaw is what displaces people. So we're trying to fight for the right to sleep 24/7, because that is the more humane option. And in doing that, we're not saying we want people to be in tents, but we're saying we want people to have a place to go, or a few places to go,
yeah,
where they can set up a tent, be safe, keep themselves from being sick, keep themselves from spreading it to their friends, dying. That should be a human right. So that's what we're fighting for now. And that's the only way that the government will actually do something about it, because here we will have groups of encampments, and BC Housing, that will be their job, is to make sure everybody gets housing, like they keep saying, instead of constantly displacing them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it seems extremely inhumane to me that somebody's died of exposure.
Yeah.
I understand that you don't want to be sleeping on the park benches, but if somebody's dying of exposure.
Yeah. So anyway, we won that right. And here we are. So we're not saying we want people to be in tents, but we're saying that this bylaw is cruel. It's cruel and unusual. And I'll give you an example, an unfortunate example. So I was helping this young couple. They were kicked around by bylaw on Pandora Street for months and months and months. They racked up thousands of dollars worth of fines. Bylaw finally took them to a different park, dropped them off sort of on the edge of town, and said, you can stay here, because this couple isn't going away. So anyway, I started helping them along with a few other outreach providers. One of the outreach providers got them into a hotel. We got them all set up in the hotel. 2 weeks later, the male, his sister died. And so there's that trauma again, right? Like they can't get a break. When they were in the tent, their friends were dying, and they were so despondent because they couldn't go to their friend's memorial because they were living in a tent. So I was supporting them with food and propane, and we got them into this hotel. His sister died, and they went back to the block, and they were using more heavily because of the trauma. Mm-hmm. And he overdosed 2 weeks ago.
Oh no.
Yeah, he overdosed. And that weighs heavy on me. You know, we almost had them out. That was somebody's son and brother, you know, uncle, and we almost had them out, but the system is so brutal, you know, it's so unkind. And the drug poisoning crisis that we have right now, which was declared a public health state of emergency in 2016, of course, you know, it's going on, and we are losing our friends and family. Like every day they're dying. In Victoria alone, we're losing 3 to 4 people a week during this pandemic and during this drug poisoning crisis. 3 to 4 people a week. And it's not all from drug poisoning. Some of it's pneumonia, some of it's infections. But we are not looking after our brothers and sisters. We are not. It's inhumane. It's cruel. And it's a human rights violation. And I'm working really hard to change that.
The fact that these people are suffering just makes them much more vulnerable to everything that's going on around them. So you can't be surprised that somebody's overdosed.
Yeah, it was completely avoidable, completely avoidable. Their community had them. We had them. We had them in a place. They were secure. They were being fed. We were looking after them, you know, but there's no resources. If you're traumatized, there's no resources.
Yeah,
right?
That's it. That's it.
So
that's it. And you, it's very hard to come off of these benefits that people are giving you. It's hard to become independent when you're constantly traumatized. Oh,
you know, and I'll tell you, people act like people should just get jobs. We've been ignoring this for 20 years now, at least. I would say 20 to 30 years. Some of these people have been outside for 10 years. So if they don't all of a sudden want to go inside and get a job, I don't blame them. We should be ashamed of the way we look after our community members, because they are our community members. I see architects out there. I see lawyers out there. I see nurses out there. I see social workers out there. And 80% of the people who are dying in the poison drug supply are men and boys. 80% between the ages of, I'd say, 25 to 50. And so there's our workforce. Plus, we've got the pandemic. Plus, we've got homelessness. I don't know. We're in a crisis. We really are.
What happened to that person's partner? Can I ask that?
You know, I know that they immediately sought family, and I know that they were looked after for a while, but I know that the male in the relationship was looking after the female. So I know that she's even more at risk right now. And I know she has mental health issues, and she's got disability issues. And so she's left alone. And, you know, I'm not too sure where she is right now.
Oh, Nikki, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, when he died, you know, it affected at least 50 people in our community. So now 50 people are in need of counseling and trauma. You know, we're trying. It's like we're throwing Band-Aids out at gunshot wounds.
Right. And that's probably the worst part that people are overlooking. It's one thing to allow people to sleep on a park bench, but it's another thing entirely when they need mental health supports of some sort.
Yeah.
Because they're never going to be able to manage any of this.
Well, and they've been judged and pushed aside by the healthcare system. They've been judged and pushed aside by the community. So if they don't all of a sudden want to get help, or, you know, it's hard for people to get help because they don't trust. They don't trust that it's actually coming. You know, they said they were going to house everybody in Victoria, and they didn't. And now by law to this day is still kicking those people around. And they will say to you, oh, they're not from here. Everybody is not from here. I was born and raised here. I know very few people who are actually from here. All my neighbors, all the mayors and council, nobody is from here anymore. But what's happening is people are moving here. And then if they don't make it and their family falls apart, you know, one thing leads to another, and here we are.
Yeah.
So we're a global community now. We need to get used to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to look after each other. And if we don't have the resources to look after each other, our governments need to step in and help. I mean, the overdose crisis has been on since 2016, and our governments have done very little to act on it. And our friends and family are dying. And I can't stress that enough.
Well, and the thing that I don't understand is how do we think this is going to resolve itself? You can't just sweep it under the carpet because it's going to still be there, whether you can see it or not. But with the overdose crisis, with the amount of homelessness we've got, it doesn't stay invisible for very long anymore. It's there. Yeah. It's in our face. Yeah. And so, you know, just being angry and nimbyistic about it doesn't fix it. I just don't understand people not leaping in and saying, okay, I need to help.
Well, you know, people want to criminalize homelessness. People want to talk about forced treatment, you know, both of which I strongly disagree. They add police to walk around with by law, which I think, again, is a violation of human rights, because I could go on.
Yeah, it is. It's very disturbing. I'm sorry that you've been put in that position, and I'm really surprised at your resilience. I mean, I can tell that you're tired.
Thank you.
I sense exhaustion at your end.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that it didn't happen a lot sooner. But I'm also really surprised that you're still getting resistance, because I cannot understand how anybody would think that was a reasonable response to the situation.
Yeah.
I want to turn to the Topaz Park encampment for a minute. When it was officially created, you were told to stop bringing in donations, and you moved your attention to Pandora Street. And
yeah,
because there were a lot of people without access to services.
Mm-hmm.
You said in your notes that it took you 4 to 6 hours every Friday to distribute the donations. You must have been getting an enormous amount of donations. Like, what were you getting, and how were you feeling about that? That must be energizing in itself.
Oh, for sure. That's where I do my best work, is when I'm actually boots on the ground helping. You know, I can't just sit around and watch misery. I have to do something about it. Yeah, I was getting carloads. You know, and I have pictures on my backpack page, you know, Facebook page. Yeah, I was getting carloads. I mean, you know, I did start off using my own funds, but after a while, people started seeing what was going on, and they just I said, I need a case of juice. And yeah, they would donate it. And yeah, it felt good. It felt really good. I was happy I was able to do that. I went from every Christmas to, I spent 2 years doing it. So yeah, I am a bit tired now. And I've just sort of started pulling back because we're in our busy season with the gardening business. And then the Christmas campaign is coming up again next fall. So, but yeah, I've been on the ground for about 2 years. And it was really heartwarming, actually. I posted a lot on Facebook because it was really heartwarming. Yeah.
Your stories themselves, though, they're pretty heartbreaking, partly because of how many people are struggling to survive. I want to turn to the temporary housing that you talked about. At least some cities went to temporary housing in hotels. Did Victoria go that route?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
And that can't have been the only temporary housing they had, because, I mean, I'm curious to know what they did and why they didn't get enough.
So when the pandemic hit, of course, there's no hotels operating. So they bought up a few of the older hotels. And, you know, I tried to keep track of the numbers. I myself think at the end of the day, they probably housed about 500 people, maybe 700 if I want to be generous, but I'll say 500. They increased shelter spaces by probably, I want to say 30. So it wasn't enough. It clearly wasn't enough. And a lot of those people that they put into hotels, they had no forethought to what they were doing. They put in all ages, all genders, all, you know, people with all sorts of different needs, and they put them all in one place, and then they didn't have the supports. They didn't have the proper supports, and they didn't have the staff that knew what to do. They were flying by the seat of their pants. And so what happens then is that people get evicted. They get evicted because they're transitioning and it's tough for them. And so there's this constant cycle of evictions going on in Victoria right now, constant. To this day, it's a cycle. And, you know, we were ill-prepared. We were very ill-prepared. But at the same time, they're not listening to the needs of what the people want. Because I'll tell you, they told us what they needed and wanted when we were in Beacon Hill Park. So if they would have more people with lived experience at these tables,
yes,
they would solve things a lot quicker.
And why do you think they're not inviting lived experience? I know in Ontario, that was a big deal.
Yeah, well, they're saying they are now. But, you know, we've seen the co-opting happen before. They pick the poster children or the most palatable people, right? And they don't listen to everybody. At the end of the day, the governments have clawed back and defunded social services so badly that the nonprofits are fighting for scraps. That's what they're doing. They're fighting for scraps amongst each other. So they're trying to keep the wheels going. They're trying to keep everything in motion, but people are still falling through the cracks. And I don't think they're listening. I don't think the governments are listening. I don't think the nonprofits are listening.
Did you ever hear from any of the vulnerable and homeless that it wouldn't have mattered what they offered them for shelter? They didn't want to go in.
Absolutely.
I hear people like the decision makers say, well, we offered them housing, but they wouldn't take it.
That's another folklore they hear, along with they're not from here. You know, like I said, we've ignored this problem for 30 years, at least. And we are seeing generation upon generation of people out there. I saw senior citizens in their late 80s. I saw children there as young as 15, 16, and everybody in between. And if there's a guy out there that has been kicked to the side by his community and uncared for 2, 3, 5 years, of course they're going to say shelter is unsafe. And shelters are historically unsafe anyway. But why would they want to live in a group setting with a bunch of other people in the middle of a pandemic and not know whether that's going to get them housing or not? And that's where we're at with the Russell Street shelter that they created and the My Place shelter. We're still seeing people, the same people in those shelters. And we're talking like almost a year later. And they can be expected to be there for up to 2 years. So when people say they don't want to go to shelter, I wouldn't go to a shelter. I absolutely would not go to a shelter. Shelters are not housing. They're not safe. They're not adequate. And hotels are not adequate housing either. They don't have kitchens. They don't have tenancy rights. And here these people are going to languish. And yes, they are building housing slowly, but there's a lot of people who are falling through the cracks still.
If top quality, locally sourced food is important to you, then Smithers is the place to be. In our town, there are many options for finding healthy, local food. Looking for a coffee shop? How about Bugwood Coffee, where friends gather for locally roasted coffee and baked goods at 1206 Main Street? Or Mountain Eagle Books, a used bookstore and cappuccino bar. Mountain Eagle on 3rd Avenue is a great place to lose yourself in a book and a coffee. Want to make it yourself? Visit Nature's Pantry on 1st Avenue, a health food store with an excellent selection of natural foods. And no town is complete without a farmer's market. The BV Farmer's Market offers fresh local produce and meats, craft beers and baked goods, artisan and craft wares, all made, baked, or grown locally. While the market is now closed for the winter, many of the vendors and farmers continue to offer products and services around town. Thank you to our sponsors, Bugwood Coffee, Mountain Eagle Books, Nature's Pantry, and the BV Farmer's Market. Food for body and soul, just like the cookie jar.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, that means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world. Not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, a different understanding, but a different picture, a different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
You've got your hand in the cookie jar on CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC, and that's a good thing. I'm your host, Christine Bruce. Before the break, Nikki Ottison explained how the Backpack Project in Victoria, BC got started, and how over the intervening 4 years, its scope increased dramatically. Up next, how local businesses, politicians, and community members tried to intervene on behalf of the homeless in Victoria, and we'll end with a frank conversation on meeting the needs of the precarious where they are.
I heard from a friend who's connected to Victoria. Now, I might have this all wrong, but I think she said it was a tiny homes community in a stadium.
In a parking lot. A parking lot near a stadium, yeah.
And how did that work out?
So it worked out well. It's being run by a nonprofit. They've got their rules, but it's safer than a tent, for sure. But apparently it's only, the contract was only until next August. It was a success, so we'll see if they extend that. I hope they do, but we'll see. But I think if there's only like 10 units there.
Oh,
so
I see.
Not a lot of people there. No.
But if it's a success, doesn't it make sense to build on that success and to expand?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what we've been trying to, you know, we've thrown all sorts of solutions at them. Conestoga huts, tiny homes. But it's the willingness to do it. You know, we have such an anti-homeless sentiment in the city. Like, we have radio stations with shock jocks here that are just, every chance they get, they're trying to say how criminal these people are. And they actually did a lot of damage in Beacon Hill Park, because every time they went on the air and they spouted off their anti-homeless sentiment, there was always repercussions at the park, always. I mean, we have stories at Beacon Hill Park where there was a car driving around throwing Molotov cocktails at the tents, and one of them caught on fire. And one of my friends put it out with his hands, and his hands were all burnt. These are stories you don't hear about in the news. It's very hush hush, you know, but the anti-homeless sentiment of Victoria is alive and well, unfortunately, and we're really trying to change that.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear about that. Are there still people donating to the homeless? I mean, if you're not directly involved, are there organizations, groups, people, private people?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, lots of people.
So that is making a difference then. I mean, if you have a shock jock, then my guess is that for every shock jock, there's 10 people out there who are making a good difference. We just don't hear about the good.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I'm not trying to get on a negative here, but what I'm saying is that the anti-homeless sentiment, it blocks things like tiny homes from happening. You know, people don't want to give up the land to put tiny homes on. So they block solutions is what they're doing. They're blocking solutions. So, because we've had many people, many intelligent people come forward with solutions, and it falls on deaf ears because you lean to the crowd that is most vocal.
Well, may I offer my sympathy to leadership, because I think it would be a very hard position to be in right now to constantly do that battle. And when I hear about these stories, the takeaway for me is to not judge anyone on their situation. The homeless are not responsible for their precarity. And if you're somebody with a job, it's been proven that hard work is not necessarily the reason you got that job. Or that's not necessarily why you've kept that job.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody would argue that we need a fairer distribution of wealth. I guess what I'd like to discuss just for a couple of minutes here is basic income guarantee, because it seems to me that that's a really good option for what we're seeing all across Canada.
Really important, really important. Those rates in BC have been frozen for like 15 years now. And I don't know how we can think that's okay. I really don't. You know, the pandemic, it showed us what people need, and it showed us where the lack was. I just don't know why the will's not there. It's just not on the table. Like, it doesn't get, it doesn't get enough airtime. It should. It's really important, because I watch people try and live on those low wages, and it's next to impossible. It just creates this cycle, constant lockdown poverty cycle.
What is it, $15 an hour that we're going up to? That's ludicrous.
Yeah, I know.
You can't live on that.
Yeah.
But I think a basic income guarantee would give people back some of their integrity and their dignity, and then they'd be able to, some of them would be able to manage a little more independence, and they'd have a desire, they'd be motivated to look for income, and maybe to work on personal hygiene a little. I mean, I don't want to work on personal hygiene if I'm stressed.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's where we come back to housing first. Housing first. We got to get people inside. Whatever that looks like for them, whatever they want, you know, but we have to get them a safe, secure place to go to sleep. Sleep and food are so important. And I think that's why I do what I do, because I know that sleep and food are the first things you need to take care of. And absolutely, if people have money to be able to look after themselves, then they aspire for more. They want more. People would love to get their teeth fixed. People would love to get medical issues that they've had for years checked into. People would love to get counseling. You know, a lot of people have come from very traumatic backgrounds, you know, myself included. And that's something in our healthcare system that we've been lacking, along with basic income. You know, it all plays into each other. We need it all.
Yeah, I know another thing that I looked into back in 2015 when I was in Ontario. The homeless, one of the things that they let slide because they have no money and no access to it is dental work. But it's very hard to get a job if your teeth are in bad shape. And your health slides when your teeth are in bad shape. You know, it's just one of those things that it sounds so small, but I can, as you were listing off the things, that if you had a little bit of disposable income, you'd manage it. And I'm sure getting your teeth looked at would be one of them.
Absolutely. Here in Victoria, we're lucky to have a nonprofit dental care. Of course, they're very busy. Of course, it takes months, but not everywhere has that. Teeth and healthcare and food and sleep and a safe place to put your head at night. You know, let's start with that before we start talking about jobs. You know, let's give people a hand up, not a hand out.
Yeah, that's a good slogan. I think it's really important. And I think it's important also to remember that a good lot of us are just one paycheck away from being precarious ourselves. And we need to have a little more consideration for the system and how poorly it's managing.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the two options that we often use for motivating each other. And one of them is the carrot and the other is the stick. And we go back to the discipline so often and so easily, but if we could only... We go to the carrot method, where we're being gentle with each other.
Yeah.
And it's just so much more motivating if somebody's been kind.
Well, absolutely. And these are things that we got to unlearn. Unfortunately, the people in power, that's not their forte. So we got to make our voices louder and louder and louder. and create change, because we've got to stop using the stick. It's not working. It never has. No. And people can tell you how to solve these problems. You just have to listen to them.
That's right. I agree. We really do need to make it a priority to include those with lived experience when we're making decisions about them. So do you have any recommendations for how people can get involved with helping out the precariously housed in Victoria?
I'm not taking donations right now until next fall again. I'm sort of taking a break. Well, you can write letters. You can write letters to mayor and council and our premier and minister of housing, mental addictions. And we can talk about basic income. Let's start advocating for what we want to see. You know, I mean, I can get all the socks and the blankets and the sleeping bags all day long, but unless something changes, we're using stopgap measures, right? So please be vocal. Please think about these things when you go to council meetings in your municipality. Think about the unhoused and the trickle effect, because if they're not in your community now, they soon will be. So what are we going to do to help that situation? We can't just keep pushing them into the bushes. That's not going to solve anything. You know, be active in your community, help where you can. And if you see somebody and you have, you know, a few shekels or a pair of socks, you know, absolutely help out wherever you can.
Somebody once said something to me that stayed with me. It's been years, but they said that they appreciate people who give to the homeless and don't question what they're going to do with the money.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. If I give $5, that is absolutely up to them what their needs are. Who am I to say, you know, like, these people do not have showers or beds or homes. Or if I give it, I give from my heart. It's without conditions. And I don't give granola bars. Nobody likes granola bars.
Okay, interesting. Good to know. Would you say it's better to give money than to give specifics? For instance, I was helping out with something the other day, and there were two types of packages. There was for the women homeless and the men homeless. And for the women homeless, they got socks. And for the men homeless, they got underwear. And I made the question, like, what if I'm a woman and I need underwear? I don't need socks. Yeah. And they said, well, this was the deal. We could only get these on sale. And I thought, but what if it's not helping the person who's receiving it?
Throughout the years, I've kind of just always gone with my gut. And sometimes I don't listen to my gut and it feels like I just gave them the wrong thing. But other times it works out, you know. I always tell people when they're packing backpacks, if there's something missing in a backpack, it's okay. Because the other one that you stock with other things will land up at the right person. So, you know, my husband, he buys people food. If he sees somebody, he says, do you want a sandwich from Tim Hortons or a hamburger? And whereas I always, at Christmas time, I have candy canes with $5 bills wrapped around them. And I just keep them in my car. And if I'm ever downtown and I see somebody, I hand them a candy cane. And they love that. They think it's great. Because, you know, they see the candy cane, they kind of look at you, and then they see the $5. Other people roll around with socks in their car, and they just hand those out. So I think everything helps. Everything helps.
Okay, good to know. That's really good advice, because it doesn't limit you on what you're doing, but it also keeps you aware that there are needs.
Yeah. You give what you can. Yeah. You give what you can where you're at.
Maybe the best thing to learn from all this is that it takes a community. We all need to be involved in whatever it is that we're doing, because we're filling in that gap.
I couldn't do this without my community. If it wasn't for everybody donating all through the pandemic, my hands would have been tied. And yet there's things that I can't do that other people can do. And that's wonderful, you know, podcasts and writing letters and sending emails and keeping it at the forefront of your mind when you're making decisions, when you're in council meetings, you know, all this stuff helps. And if you have extra socks, give them out. And if you have an extra backpack, give it out. And if you don't feel comfortable doing it, give it to somebody who can. It's mutual aid. We should all just be able to share the excess that we have, because there's a lot of excess in this world right now. And yet there's a lot of people who need it. So pass it on.
Nikki, thank you so much for your time. And I really appreciate the energy that you've put into the last 10 years on behalf of the homeless in Victoria. I hope that we will be hearing some positive stories out of Victoria and across Canada this summer. I'm hoping that we will be more aware of what's happening and how we can help.
Yeah, me too. We're going to stand fast in Victoria. I really want people to be aware of what we're fighting out there.
Well, we do need facts. We need the statistics. We need to hear. I mean, I don't want you to think bad things of certain people, but I do want to know if there's a space there. You know, well, the local politicians are hearing from the NIMBYs. Okay, well, I'm not a NIMBY, so I'm going to write a letter and I'm going to say this is just not good enough. You know, there's for me. I want people to know that, like, I intentionally, too many times I get involved with organizations whose hearts are in the right place, but they are very specific in what they give, and it's all empty calorie food. They don't all need to eat Kraft dinner.
and donuts. Do you know how sick people are of donuts and granola bars? No, people aren't up for that.
Keep the lived experience in there. Like, make sure that you're asking the people, here's a pair of underwear, but I don't need underwear, but here's a pair of underwear. And then they make them feel bad about it. Well, you're not very grateful. Well,
no, I know. When I used to bring all my stuff to the park, I used to lay it out on the tables and people would pick what they want.
Right? Oh, I like that idea.
It's not an assembly line of here's a pair of socks, here's a pair of socks, here's, you know, I just lay it out and let them do it. You know,
Nikki, that's very thoughtful. I like that. One of my girlfriends, she and I were both homeless for a little while, and she had family members who tried to give her a dresser because they said, well, where will you put your clothes? And she said, well, the larger question is, where will I put the dresser?
Wow. Oh, no.
Like, people tried to make her feel badly for not wanting the dresser.
I know. You know? I know.
And I thought I was very ungrateful because I didn't want their hand-me-down socks. But I thought, well, me something. People Why am I becoming your dump?
No, people don't want used socks either. Let me tell you that. They don't want, and they don't want clothes that haven't been washed.
Why would they?
I get a lot of clothes that haven't been washed. It's awful.
Aww.
Yeah. But it's just little things that people don't think of, right? But it's really important,
they don't.
You know?
We're doing them a favor more than the favor that they're doing for the homeless. And so, I don't want to be your dump.
No, exactly. I can't believe Facebook, you know, how many supporters I have. Like, if I put a call out for anything, I have it by next week. It's just amazing.
Oh, really? You know, so how many people would you say are following you?
Right now, I have about 2,800.
And
then
are
I have Instagram,
Victoria?
Which I'm new to.
Okay.
Not all of them, but I mean, there's so many local people that, like, I could think of 12 main people who, if I put a call out, these ladies, they just load me up with whatever I need. If I say I need women's underwear, I have it. You know, if I say I need a 10-speed bike, I have it. And because they know it's going directly to the people. Like, I'm not a nonprofit and I never will be, because I want to be able to speak truth to power.
Yeah.
So I just want it to be a community hub, so to speak. I'm just the middle person, and I just get people what they need. And, you know, when I give these things to people, they are so grateful. They are so shocked. They're like, really? You got that for me? Somebody gave that to me? And I'm like, yes, somebody gave that to you. We care about you. You're friends and family, and we stand with you. And, you know, I tell them we're trying to change the laws. We're trying to make change so that they don't have to live like that anymore.
Well, think about that from the other side for a minute. The people, you're enabling the vulnerable, but you're also enabling the donors, because they don't know what's the best thing to give, right?
Yeah.
When talking about people give donuts, well, I mean, their heart's in the right place, but they just don't know what to give, right? So so if you're saying they really need socks, and you say these people run right out and I give socks right away, I get a bicycle, right? Well, because they're waiting for you to tell them what is needed, right? And you've enabled both ends. How lovely.
Yeah, it's actually pretty fun. Really, it is pretty fun. I get all the glory, you know, everybody's saying to me, but yet I have so many people helping. Like, it's crazy. So it's awesome. It's awesome. It's what keeps me going. Yeah.
You know, I don't know that I would want to be the person that in your shoes who has seen how difficult, you know, you've watched the difficulties. You were telling about how when the pandemic first hit, there were only a couple of people on the street, you know, you and the homeless. And that would be heartbreaking to watch that, to witness that. And then you're witnessing people being kettled and people not getting homes. And that's really got to be difficult. But I think there are a lot of people who would automatically just hide. But you, what you do is you say to other people, whoa, we need bicycles, we need underwear, we need socks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I joke with my friend, I always say, I always run into the burning building for some reason. I am one of those people, just goes right into the burning building. I can't help myself. It's healed me in a way, you know, those Monday circles we had in Beacon Hill Park. Oh my gosh, like the honesty and the vulnerability and the humanity and the community. It was just heartwarming. It really was. Like it kept me going for 2 years, you know. And it kept other people going for 2 years. So
what's a Monday circle? What, I don't know what that is.
Well, it started off with me bringing hot food and donations. So I would bring a table, set out the hot food, and then I would throw tarps out and throw all the donations on. And we would start meeting every Monday. And so we would form a circle. And it was started initially by an elder, First Nations elder. And when you hold the feather, it's your turn to speak. And you say who you are, what your name is, where you're from. And you tell everybody what you want to share, whether it's good or bad or funny or, oh, we had a beautiful time. And everybody would get to say something and air their grievances or yell at the province or, you know, it was great. It kept everybody going. And right up until people were getting housed, you know, there was some people that got housed. And those were great days. Those were great moments, you know, people that had been outside for a long time. And the circles are what held us together as a community, because for the first time, they weren't being kicked around by bylaw. They were allowed to stay. They were allowed to just set their tents down and talk. And we could all talk. We can ask them, what do you need? And they would tell us. And then the next week we would bring it. And they, you know, what do you need now? And we would just try and keep them safe and keep them alive and keep them fed. I'm trying to elevate people. I'm trying to amplify people's voices by keeping them fed and keeping them warm and keeping them dry.
And you're also holding space for them to share their stories, which is really important.
Very important. Yeah.
Which nation is Victoria? Which whose land is that?
Lekwungen.
Well, big shout out, because how wonderful is that, that they allowed them to share their stories and just be heard. What dignity that is.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. It was amazing. This elder wasn't from here, but she is an elder and she's trusted throughout the community and she's been helping the homeless for a very long time. They actually did a documentary about the Beacon Hill Park experience. We had a film crew follow us for, I think it was 6 to 8 months. And so this group was called the Existence Project.
Okay.
And the movie's called Moving Day. And the premiere has been out last month, I think. It's great, not just because I'm in it, but it's heartwarming. It's heartbreaking. It's a great film. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you get a chance, check it out. It's called Moving Day by the Existence Project.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope it shows the world that the people in the parks are us. They're us. They're our kids. They're our brothers. They're our nieces. They're our aunties. They're us. Thank you.
Never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over me. Back pocket of my jeans, got my thumb out on the road but trying not to be seen. Scramble on the beach, already half in the bag, and the big red sun's already starting to sag. I've never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over me. Pocket for a cigarette. I'm way too young to have a habit yet. And the stars pick me up and drag me into the sky. Forgot where I was going, but my blood is still flowing. And I've never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. The closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over me. Smell of tobacco bonds flowing in. The water's just waiting for the touch of my skin to baptize my youth before I leave on a whim. The night is old and those awake are feeling bold, and nobody's afraid of the bite of the cold. So let the water cloak you like the blanket of God, and the great lake embrace you as you fall into its charm. Never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over. Never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over. Wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over me.
You've been listening to From Backpacks to Safe Housing with Nikki Otteson of The Backpack Project. The Cookie Jar is produced by Christine Bruce with music by Eli Larson. Aired through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC, and available anytime at smithersradio.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. You can follow The Backpack Project, like I do, on social media at facebook.com/backpackprojectvictoriabc. And if you want to do some advocacy, Victoria City Council has made it really easy. To contact the mayor and the entire city council all at once, use the email mayorandcouncil@victoria.ca. Oh, and one more thing. Don't be a NIMBY.